Okay, today is May 6th, 2014. This is an interview with Jeffrey Schachner. Is that how you say your last name?
Yes, Troy.
Okay. This interview is being done as part of a project to try to get some interviews around the 1969 Black Strike on our campus. My name is Troy Reeves, and I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. Jeff, if you would, if you could say your name and spell your last name, it'll help us get the sound quality of this audio.
Got it. Jeffrey Schachner, S as in Sam, C-H-A-C-H, N as in Nancy, E-R.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to move the recorder a little closer to the phone speaker. And that should help. So, did you go by Jeff or Jeffrey?
Jeff, please.
Okay. Jeff, just to start off then, as I said before I turned the recorder on, I'm interested in knowing what brought you to Madison in 1966.
Okay. I left high school in suburban Long Island, New York, with some excellent grades, etc. Made a number of applications to the Ivy League, was rejected, and then Madison took pity on me. So in September 66, I reported first to the dorm at Celery Hall, 8th floor. Then courses began shortly thereafter. The key meeting, Troy, and I think you'll find this very gratifying in terms of your previous interviews, is within the first 3 weeks of being in the dorm, a dorm mate took me over to meet somebody by the name of John Coatsworth.
Okay.
So once Coatsworth got a hold of me, and others in his, at that time, graduate student circle, building a new campus activation program, direct action, Wisconsin Student Association political party called UCA, University Community Action, Coatsworth and a couple of others, including Paul Soglin, became mentors to me, a freshman. So they rushed me into planning so that I would actually sit on the board of UCA. And they had heard about my background in high school that I don't feel I need to go into at this time, although everything I had done in terms of social action as a high school student and before, starting at age 15 in public protest, led me to the University of Wisconsin.
Okay, Jeff, I know you said you didn't want to go into it at this time, but how did they know, how did the folks here know that you had been involved in social action before you came to this campus?
Coatsworth, Soglin, and others sat down and interviewed me based on the actual referral from the dormmate who had become friendly with them and a potential activist. His name, for the record, is Tony Alluzzi, I-L-L-U, T as in Tom, U-T-Z-I, something like that. But Tony was recently on email with me verifying all this, that he was the referral to Coatsworth and Soglin.
Okay, thank you. So you immediately become involved in this UCA, become friendly or friends with Coatsworth, Soglin, and others.
Well, I was given work. That's the point. I was given roles and work, and I was to sit on a board and interview candidates for student government that we were running that October 66 against, you know, basically the Greeks.
Okay. And as a incoming freshman, you felt comfortable in that role?
Only because of the intelligence and the commitment of guys like Coatsworth, Soglin, another guy I'll mention now because I really considered him a mentor, and he had been from New York as well as myself, but we didn't know each other high school days. His name was Ira Shore, S-H-O-R. He, Coatsworth, Soglin, and about two or three others, very few women, I have to admit, and we'll get back to that theme later. They were just incredibly warm. I felt incredibly blessed and gifted to have been handed over to these people as mentors within, again, my first month. Unbelievable.
So, Jeff, to sort of run a parallel track here, since, you know, obviously you attended school here, when you came to college here, did you have a major? Did you have an idea of what you wanted to do in terms of a major?
Yeah, but I waited till the next year. That would be 67 to declare sociology.
Okay. So you're living in Sellery. You're doing this work already. What classes were you taking that first year?
Okay. Among the most enthralling and challenging intellectually, Troy, was 19th century German philosophy by a guy who was a mentor to Professor Walter Kaufmann at Princeton. Ivan, I can't remember his last name, but I recently reached out to him. He's still alive in Madison now, retired, about 74 years old. I wish I had his last name, but that's one example. Then the intro to sociology classes. I didn't have to take English comp, but I took some English. And then the language requirement was French, and that was really going to be the challenge for the next couple of years academically for me, getting through French. I was in the honors program when I arrived, but due to a grade in French second semester in that first year, I was dumped from the honors program.
So I assume you hadn't, had you taken French before? I guess the question probably is why?
School, in high school, just a little bit. Back then, the BA in LNS, Troy, had to have a foreign language or science requirement met.
Okay, so you chose foreign language and French?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So 66, the 66-67 semester obviously is the year before the Dow riot. But what sort of what is campus? Well, let's ask this way. I mean, you're coming from New York. You come to this campus in the fall of 1966. What are you seeing in terms of activism or protests on campus?
Well, the first big potential pain point for all of us was the shock of what the Committee Against the War in Vietnam organized to do in the Ag Hall against Teddy Kennedy when he spoke in October 66. That shocked me, even with my background, that they shouted him down.
Were you in the Stock Pavilion that day?
Yes.
Yeah, that's one we don't... We actually don't have a lot of people speaking to. It sort of gets overlooked in this. But that's...
Well, again, I know the politics of it in retrospect because I knew who was in charge. We call them the Trotskyites. They were the committee to end the war in Vietnam, led by a young man named Robin, very clean cut, which was the Trot, quote-unquote, approach.
Okay. I guess let's get back to the UCM, jumping around here a little bit. You said you were interviewing possible candidates for student government. How did your candidates end up competing against basically the Greeks that they were running against?
We won every seat and became the majority student government political party called United Campus Action, UCA. Totally won. I remember a guy named Zwick, Robert Zwick, either S-W-I-C-K, like a 6'5 guy, native in-state, Wisconsin, he won a seat. Soglin obviously won a seat, stuff like that. We won them all.
That had to make you feel pretty good.
Again, I was already feeling good due to the company I was keeping.
So let's move forward to that, to your second year here, unless there are things that you want to talk about in that first year that you think will help.
I just think since you brought up Dow, my arm was hooked into that arm of Paul Soglin in the basement of the Commerce Building when the police came in.
Ah, okay. So maybe we, since I brought it up and you just brought it up, what are your memories of that day?
Not good. Because of the pain when I heard 67 injuries were incurred, including a roommate of mine in my off-campus apartment. And he wasn't even, an activist or a radical. So I was very concerned and not at all appeased by the faculty meetings and trying to get the cops off campus. It was already done, and it was horrible.
So, Jeff, just to confirm before, was this the first time, you don't have been here for a year, but this is the first time where such a violent event had happened on campus?
Yes, in my memory. Okay. I had only taken one step in activity publicly before then, and that was to sign what was called the draft resistors we won't go statement. So there were about 100 students who signed that, and I did that early on in my sophomore year. So that was the first big step into activism. Everything else was, you know, within the, you know, student government circles. So I stepped out there, which could have meant possible expulsion or suspension, by signing that, because that went directly to campus administration. And that list is duplicated, by the way, in the movie The War at Home, made by the director Glenn with two N, Silber, S-I-L-B-E-R. But be that as it may, that was my first step, and then Dow was the big pain point.
Okay. I think it's important, because we don't know who will listen to this and when, just how big an issue it was, particularly for males, the draft. So I assume there came a point where you got a draft number.
No, here's what happened. First, we preemptively, Troy, went with the We Won't Go, even though there was not even any congressional legislation nationally to take away the student deferment. There was not even discussion under the Johnson administration for that when we signed the We Don't Go statement. It was a statement of conscience and civil disobedience. Again, this is all replicated in the documentary movie,
mm-hmm.
The War at Home.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, next, what Dow did to me personally was a complete radicalization.
And then how did you start to display that radicalization?
By joining SDS, campus chapter.
What was the first meeting like after you joined?
Well, first of all, SDS was active in trying to build the resistance to go further beyond the Dow, as it's later called, the Dow War. So, you know, they stepped up to what they felt was, you know, a quote, you know, it's from a student perspective, war with a small W.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, we had to have... So I started getting exposed here in my second year after Coatsworth, Soglin, and Shore, now to a different leadership.
And do you recall the names of some of those leaders?
Robert Cohn, Evan Stark.
Okay.
These are guys well documented in the Dow War literature or history, if you will, Troy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those were two specifically great speakers. Then there were the Kaplan brothers, K-A-P-L-A-N. And then a young sophomore like myself named Michael Rosen.
And just for the record, we will be talking to Michael tomorrow. Or at least I will.
Stepped up to that. Michael has much more data in the heart of where I want to go with this history, and that's into the Black Student Steering Committee, which Michael sat on as a fixed permanent member.
Mm-hmm.
I was substitute second chair to him and attended one meeting, which is the reason why I can speak about it, because I was primary for a two-hour meeting taking Michael's place.
Okay, and we will get to that shortly. So... Jeff, year two, were you still living on campus?
I was on State Street, 642 State Street, above what was called Burgerville. Now I'm laughing. We should have a little fun with this, Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine?
Was it a one-bedroom place? Were you sharing it?
Sharing bedrooms. There were four of us. I shared mine with a rabbinical student, and the other bedroom was one of the guys who had been hurt at Dow and hospitalized, and an in-state young man.
Okay. Jeff, let's take a second since you mentioned Burgerville. A student can't live by protest alone, so I'm wondering what are some of the places on campus or slightly off campus on State Street where you know, kids hang out, had meals, drank a beer? Where were some of the places where...
Remember, it was very key. There was a... pool, P-O-O-L, or billiards parlor restaurant, and I have trouble grappling with it on that same north side of State Street between 642, my apartment, very close to campus on State, and going east toward the Capitol. Some of my brothers out here know the name of that. I just can't recall it. That was a key place.
Okay.
And then there was Gino's Italian Restaurant on Gorham, stuff like that.
Okay. And then what...
And of course, I think I really post a lot of hours in the Rathskeller.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask what role the rat played in your formative years here on campus.
Well, as I put in my bio, I was recruited as a student government and SDS already veteran in April 68, right in the Rathskeller by the National Student Association.
Yeah, so that ends up being that's the spring of your second semester, if I'm getting my math right here. And so you were approached...
Student government types, some student government peer-level types, not SDS, introduced me to this guy from the National Student Association in the Rathskeller.
And then, as you say in your bio, he wanted you to help possibly prevent rioting in Chicago?
He recruited two students from each of a number of campuses to attend a training by National Student Association trainers and leaders on the west side of Chicago in a motel the weekend after King died, and that started that Friday night. So it was a rush job.
Okay. And then it says here in your bio you found out later that this group was funded by the CIA or backed by the CIA?
Yes, in 1970, either the New York Times or somebody broke it that the NSA was a front for the CIA.
Okay, but you didn't obviously realize that at the time.
Absolutely not. Just saw it as a great, ad hoc, temporary effort of a student government group, and I liked that there were everybody was chosen from a number of universities. I remember one specifically from the University of Illinois, a young woman, very nice, Susan Dicker, D-I-C-K, I know the names. There was Terry Hall from a Wisconsin university, I think Beloit, something like that. So it was good. It was a number of different campuses. I can't remember who my Madison compatriot was for that. They tried to do it in buddies, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And so did you end up actually on the west side of Chicago then, trying to do some work?
Yeah, in fact, the rioting broke out moving from east to west near West Madison, so we were concerned, but we were supposed to deal with crowd control, but we relied on our training and our leaders to tell us when, if we would intervene at all. It turned out we never left the motel, but the whole 2.5-day episode was witnessed by a New York Times reporter, a very well-known guy at the time, Kiffner, K-I-F as in Frank, N as in Nancy, E-R, who actually participated in the sessions, which included some martial arts for defense.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that.
So this is getting us close to the Black Strike. Again, to not necessarily go off topic, but just to ask how you spent these first couple of summers in between your freshman, sophomore, and then sophomore, junior. Did you stay here in Madison?
Not that summer of my sophomore year, okay. So by May 68, I had applied to be a VISTA volunteer in Service to America summer associate. I was accepted into that program in June, and in July I was sent. And this is really part of the fun of life. Okay, I thought I was going to Appalachia or one of the ghetto areas in a big city. I was sent 60 miles from my parents' home on Long Island, New York, to work with migrant farm workers. That's what I did the summer of 68.
And so was it a bit of a letdown being that close to home, or was it still exhilarating work?
I cannot tell you what differences we'd say today from my IT tech world, Troy, that there were huge firewalls between suburban Long Island, New York, county just east of New York City called Nassau County, and what's called the North Fork of Eastern Long Island, which were all transplanted Polish farmers from Virginia who then seasonally employed migrant farm workers on the North Shore, North Fork, kind of like the North Shore of Long Island, way east near the end of Long Island on its eastern tip, 118 miles east of New York City, where they did vegetables and potato farming.
Okay. So I assume you were there when Robert Kennedy was assassinated?
No, I remember taking a comp lit final in June. That would be June 5th, 68.
Okay.
When we heard Kennedy was killed the night before. I had stayed up all night studying, so I didn't get that because didn't do TV at that time. So I got it right before I went in for my comp lit final, June 5th.
Oh, that's right.
No, June 6th. That would have been June 6th.
Yeah, that's right. The semesters went longer back then than they do than they do now.
Surely did.
Okay, so you came back onto campus, and after the summer in Long Island, it's now the fall of 68, or the fall of your junior year.
Correct.
And
when
then
I was the guy that went and rented the house at 445 West Wilson, and I chose Michael Rosen as one of my roommates. And that's what started the relationship that leads me to be on the phone with you today.
Okay, so was he your only roommate in that house?
No, we had two others, one of whom had been radicalized, and again, he's not covered, so I can't mention his name, and he was convicted on, I think, a minor felony in his activism, and he was jailed in 69. He was not available in the Black Strike.
Okay. So what was that neighborhood like at that time? Was it
incredible for students to be in a regular neighborhood. We were on the second floor, Troy. Downstairs was a single mother and a lovely child named Missy, just wonderful. In my birthday the next year, I invited them to the party out in the park by West Wilson there near Lake Monona. We had real people. And then I was dating a real person, a single welfare mother of two, who was eventually married a city councilman, but before that was interrogated by two FBI agents in April 69, after the Black Strike.
Okay.
So there were real connections for me by the time I was a junior.
Right. And then what classes or what professors are you taking classes from or learning from as you
My
become an upperclassman?
My teacher had an advisor named Maurice Zeitlin, and he's now emeritus, soon to retire here at UCLA in Los Angeles. And he and I spoke at a party about 15, 20 years ago. He said how disappointed he was that I didn't go on in graduate school. He was very negative about my being in business. That was very uncomfortable. So it was kind of a Hollywood party, huh? I was just being nice. Hi, Professor Zeitlin, how are you? And he got a little tough love on me.
It's a small world sometimes, huh?
Well, UCLA, from what I understand, is a pretty good social department. In fact, my son's coming from Harvard to do research at UCLA on a program that's co-managed between Harvard Soc and UCLA Soc.
Okay. So, were you taking any history classes from people like Massey or Goldberg?
No, I did mention in the bio because they were very influential because many of us SDS people were in those lectures by Harvey Goldberg and George Massey, especially Goldberg and Ack Hall. That would have 400 people in it, you know, three-quarters of which weren't even in the class. I mean, it was unbelievable. And his work on Iran specifically, wow, foretold so much of what then happened. Unbelievable. He said that was going to be the main pain world crisis in the world. And he was saying this in 1969.
It's amazing. So in the late fall of 69 is when what's called Black Thursday now on the Oshkosh campus occurred.
Great. Glad you bring up Oshkosh because there is a very important possible smoking gun in your interview that I emailed you a note, an extract or excerpt from. I sent you Monday, April 21st, what's called Extract from Ruth Doyle Interview, parenthesis, Reeves, Ren.
Right.
She is somewhat confused. Her narrative is about her Thanksgiving 68, which corresponds with the Oshkosh action of November 68. But as the quote indicates, she was asked to be at a meeting where Willie and Libby were already co-heads of the Black Student Alliance with a third, quote, black student who, for the love of me, I can't identify.
Okay.
She's saying she was in that meeting. But that meeting wasn't November because the BSA didn't come to life until February 69.
Okay.
So I'm looking at that quote. She says, I came back Friday after Thanksgiving. I was summoned to the office, blah, 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 blah. They wanted me fired as part of their 13 demand. So she's confused in her narrative. But the key is that, and I'll have as much time on this, but I'm not primary, but I did sit in the steering committee, and Oshkosh was always spoken about. But what I sent you last night was that three students had asked to be readmitted into Madison. So the BSA put that in their demands, that they had to be absorbed and enrolled.
Right. Okay.
I didn't even know that till last night.
Huh. So then,
years later.
So at the time, Jeff, then, in November of 68, do you recall knowing of what was going on the Oshkosh campus?
Just reading in the paper, but Rosen and my roommate was quite upset.
Okay.
He was already talking to Willie. So Willie, Rosen, Libby get together with one or two other people, one of whom I will identify from the meeting I attended, about the expulsions. They were beyond upset. And so there was already a relationship. But then the guy from San Francisco State came down and basically, and his name is Nathan Dare, D-A-R-E, incredible name. And Nathan says to Willie, and you'll get more of this from Rosen, the actual word saying, you know, you guys are supposed to be a powerhouse campus and an organized black, civil rights movement. We need you to do something about this and something very strong. So Nathan Dare from San Francisco State, that had already had a successful action.
Okay.
Challenged Willie and Libby Edwards to get something going.
Okay.
And they told Rosen, who told me.
Okay. So then, Jeff, sounds like your involvement in the Black Strike happens in February when the actual Black Strike happens on this campus.
Well, that's where I did a little forensics, because I'm very serious about your time, my time, and the archives as we get into this. So I'm looking at my sociology core course in my major notebook, and it gives us some forensics on the timeline.
Okay.
So, on February 5th, I attended class number 2 in that semester for 2 social courses. And then, and I was a copious and serious note taker and serious student, and after February 5th, the next time I sat and took notes was February 19th. So we're going to call those 2 weeks the planning period, because my notebook goes dark from February 19th to March 5th. So in those 3 weeks, that's the core of the timeline that I can deduce from this. But I have the written notes in front of me, so I know we're live, I have professors' names, and I have the dates.
Okay, so...
So in the first week, either before or after February 5th, Rosen said, go to the committee meeting for me.
Okay.
Now, one of the real touch points and anchors of the reality of this for my testimony is I walk into the meeting at some campus room, and there's George Rogers, who had been my teammate on the fencing team, a black student.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Willie's there, Libby's there, George Rogers, I'm there for SDS. For Rosen and a couple of other people. The name of that group is very important, and nobody knows who is not, you know, in African studies how to actually spell it. It's called Wapindusi Wayusi. Absolutely a key historical term. Anything outside that is outside the leadership and the Power Committee of the Black Strike. The Wapandusi YUC had 100% planning, execution, and control. Nobody else could talk to the press. Nobody else could do anything. If the police said, you got to stop this, they could only contact somebody on the Wapandusi YUC. This is very top-down and very structured. And that's the meeting that I attended for Rosen either before February 5 or shortly thereafter, after which all of my social courses disappear.
Right. It sounds like...
I was on strike.
Yeah. So it sounds like those notes you took on February 5th were, except for maybe one exception, they were the last class notes you took for a month.
Right.
Okay.
I go back. This up. I go back Wednesday, March 5th, 1969, into that class, which is called, just for the record. Again, then I have a notebook that I can read. It's unbelievable.
Okay. It's great, is what it is.
I'm glad. I'm serious. This is Personality Sociology, Robert Heise, H-E-I-S-E. Okay. So now I can put that book aside.
So is it because you took Rosen's place that you're proxied into the Wapentusi YUC, or?
Yeah, proxy's a good word. They didn't know who I was. They trusted that Rosen had sent a subordinate or a peer. And the only person not in the Wapentusi YUC, or the only person not a member of either the committee or the Black Student Association on the committee, was Michael Rosen.
Okay. So that meeting is just, and just is not the right word, but that meeting is students that are planning the Black Strike.
Well, number one, I don't have notes because nobody was allowed to take notes.
Mm-hmm.
There was no tape recorder.
But from your memory, is there any administrators, faculty?
No. Again, the Wapandusi YUC are Willie, Libby, a tiny handful of Black students, and Michael Rosen or myself, and myself only in that one meeting.
Okay.
George Rogers is one of the students. Again, that's important. That's an anchor, so I know this happened.
Right. Okay.
George Rogers is from Chicago. I've asked help with the Wisconsin State Journal research guys, and we can't find them.
Okay. So after this meeting you attend, how would you describe your involvement in the strike?
Well, unfortunately, I have to now ask you for double down on confidentiality.
Okay, so what you're saying is this section needs to be...
reasonably acceptable confidential statement in front of me, but now I'm going into areas of, just have to say what it is, criminal activity.
All right, well, maybe we should, at least for this session, then...
Yeah.
Not talk about
that and respect that. I'm just going to tell you that Rosen went to the meeting. Rosen came back and said, now everybody knows who you are, but more importantly, I know who you are. This is what Willie, Libby, the committee wants done. Can you do it?
Okay. Well, maybe we'll just
leave it for now.
Yeah, we'll just
right?
leave. Yeah, we'll leave that there for now then.
Sure.
But there is then a picture that I think you sent, or did Rosen send, of the two of... Was it both of you at a meeting?
No. Again, Rosen was the only identified either Caucasian or student of the Democratic Society, non-BSA member of the Wapandusi YUC. He was the only one from the student leadership on campus allowed to speak. The other guy is, I think, in the same meeting addressing. That's in the archive. But what we have, and we've located in L.A., is a total picture, photography, story of the Black Strike in a small, very inexpensively produced black and white photo book on the Black Strike. We know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep trying to get it to you.
Okay.
That should be totally digitized. If you, for instance, Troy, did a presentation on this or the process of it October this year at the OHA, you might want to throw some pictures up.
Right.
They are hugely dynamic. Nothing like talking in an assembly. These are actually out on the strike lines.
Okay. So I guess the one thing that we can talk at least I assume we can talk on the record, is they asked you, even though you weren't, they asked you to sort of serve as a security person at a meeting, is that?
No, no, that's way down the line.
Okay.
So we're not going to identify the specific action item I was given, but Rosen said, Willie and the committee need us in SDS to step up and do an action for them during the strike, in the first or second days of the strike. Can you do it, Jeff? So I was given total responsibility to do it and accepted it and finished it off.
Okay. So what do you feel you can talk about? Since I
was asked by the very top-down leadership through Rosen, who was part of the top-down leadership.
Well, I guess, Jeff, not about this specific event, but what else? I mean, since this is an interview that I'd like to have be available to the public,
right.
What sort of things in general can you talk about?
Okay, well, yeah, I did note down some of the things I did. So,
okay.
An example. Several of us close to Rosen were issued walkie-talkies during the first few days of the strike to coordinate, number one, where the most police were going to be. To keep advising the leaders, including Willie himself, through the walkie-talkie network, you know, where the most police presence was in case he wanted to move there or divert from the police presence. So it was always in flux, the actual each day's movements led by the committee, never identified, and I can understand this in terms of, you know, staying away from police presence or from potential, litigation, staying away from the police. So Rosen's part was to manage the walkie-talkies among two or three of us. And that was on a daily basis, and one day I was on the balcony on the backside of Baskin, and I was holding the walkie-talkie talking, and then we had guys, football players, threaten to assault me, and they started to push me down a row of stairs until one of the girls, women, if you say it now, who was a girlfriend, one of the guys said, "Stop it, stop it, you're going to kill him." So it got very bad.
And that's something that is noted in, at least somewhat noted in the four or five pages in the University of Wisconsin history, is the conflict between basically some of the white football players and those.
I had never been, and I had started at 15 years old, as I mentioned very early on with you this afternoon, Troy, in public protest, but I had never been threatened with bodily harm, where guys were actually putting their hands on me. Much bigger guys and more than one. So I was totally frightened and intimidated.
Okay.
Very proud that I held on to my position in the walkie-talkie, but if this young woman hadn't spoken up, I don't know.
Right.
Anyway, that's an example of what I was doing for Rosen and the committee, and I wasn't alone in doing that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea was to get info to Willie in real time where the most police were. Then finally, on a daily basis, as we started to get way long, protracted into the 3 weeks, we had a car at the house, and I got into it, an old Peugeot, every morning to see how many National Guard were at Camp Randall to do an estimate and report back.
So some reconnaissance from,
exactly,
from the road, so to speak.
Yes, and not to have any interaction with any law enforcement or National Guardsmen.
So, Jeff, is there anything else in your notes you feel comfortable speaking to about this? Any other anecdotes you want to tell that you feel comfortable telling in this venue?
Again, only that we were under orders for most of the time. But beyond that, and relative thing we'll talk about if you choose next time or down the road, Troy, is that Rosen was told, "We don't know how serious you guys are taking this or if you're going to be with us, if we can count on you. So you have to demonstrate that in an action, a direct action to us, so we can accept what you, Michael, are saying about your brothers and sisters, which would be the SDS people." So that's where my activity had to roll up, not just being second to him at a meeting, but I had to do the action.
Okay.
I had to manage it.
Okay. So, So the Black Strike, the Black Strike goes through early March.
Again, you say early March, I'm back in class, and the only reason, as a so-called, committed student for the Black Strike, the only way I'm in class is when the whole thing's over.
Right.
And I can only identify that from the notebook, March 5th, 1969, in that same Robert Heise class, personality sociology.
Right, and that might align with, I have a document from Young's papers. Says Tuesday, March 4th, black students on Madison campus hold news conference at Union, say they recognize faculty okay of new Black Studies department only as first step in answer to the 13 demands. They say they will maintain the pressure.
You're making me feel good that I didn't cut the Black Strike. I cut class, not the Black Strike. Again, my commitment was not till it was over to go back, and that makes me feel like I met my commitment. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a quote for you.
Sure.
From a professor at Princeton. We're going back now to the piece of the interview hooks up to the converging social movements that push Willie and Libby to get this thing moving. We talked in depth, and you have a number of oral interviews, one with Kircher and maybe Ruth Doyle and every others, but anything about Oshkosh is a matter of record, I think well documented. But Noli M. Rooks, in her book, Professor of Afro-American Studies at Princeton, has the following quote. The book is White Money, Black Power, published 2006 by Beacon Press. Quote, the first university-level black students program, now 36 years old, grew out of student unrest activism and a strike organized by blacks and whites at San Francisco State University. Unquote. She's well-known in the field, and her documentation is Madison wasn't the first. But as I explained to you, that Rosen might have more data on in his interview tomorrow, Dare. See, that's the mistake I made in this interview. His name is Hare, H-A-R-E.
Oh, okay.
Because he dared Willie, that's what I called him Dare. That's, cognitive error I made.
So
what Noli Rooks, Afro-American professor currently at Princeton, is saying in her book, 2006, is the first big one. Black student strike was at San Francisco State, which corresponds to everything Rosen told me about Nathan Hare, H-A-R-E, getting hold of Willie, coming to Madison, and getting Willie to take some moves, to take some action. So that's really important that she's referring to the black student strike. Otherwise, it's hearsay and word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
She's documenting something that I, quote, in the know, unquote, and Rosen know. That
right.
Oshkosh and San Francisco State made a confluence, if you will, that resulted in this huge civil rights in the North history event called the Black Student Strike at University of Wisconsin. So that kind of sums up maybe
right.
Where we're going or where we've been in this hour or so.
Right, and I want to, since I have you here and this is the, for lack of a better word, sort of public interview, I want to talk a little bit about bringing you to sort of the end of your undergraduate career, if you don't mind, if you have a minute or two.
Of course, I have all the time. You said 75 minutes. We're well under that. No problem.
Okay. So how did or did it being involved in the Black Strike affect that spring semester academically for you?
Academically, and I'm just reading research today in educational leadership and policy, totally not related to the University of Wisconsin, about professors who are saying the relationship early on when high school students get to a campus with mentoring and advisor professors are the key to hold their success. Troy, not just at school, but in life, these people go on to have great jobs. It's a key element. So when I started losing professors, I lost two professors shortly after the Black Strike, both by suicide, Troy. They took huge stands, took incredible grief from the university since they probably shut down their own classes. I didn't know. I wasn't tracking that, and I wasn't going to any classes. But there were two suicides as a result at the professor level in social science.
Okay.
No, not both exactly in sociology. One is history, I'm sorry, and the other is Ed Syk. So I had the Ed Syk professor, and later learned, because I had had him earlier in my time frame as a student, that he had committed suicide, as did the history guy. And the history guy was really well known, and the son of a much bigger history professor figure in the country. So that's the biggest alarm, personally, when you see the commitment made by certain people, which became end-of-life decisions. This, not in retrospect, but shortly after, the press conference shows you how much conflict, how much concerns, how much problem, whatever behavioral issues were involved in the black student strike.
Okay.
It means the reason I'm managing this or developing this whole process, and thankfully you're involved now for a year, Troy, is because it's a totally missing piece in the civil rights of the North in American history. That it became this divisive at a major public institution. We're not talking San Francisco State or Oshkosh. We're talking about the University of Wisconsin-Madison had a huge problem and issue with the black student strike that reverberated. This makes it, and this Penn professor says, absolutely, I've ignored that in my book, Sweet Land of Liberty, The Story of the Civil Rights in the North. I want that information when available, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't have your name, but you have his name.
Right.
And he's probably the predominant emeritus professor right now, still researching civil rights in the North.
Okay.
I sent you his email, so whenever you feel free to notify him, it's open. But that's the level of interest, as we're summarizing here in our first session. We lost people. We lost lives due to what happened in Madison those 3 weeks in February, 69. It was a life-changing event for many, many people. But I must say it was viewed successfully as not just these professors who made their stand supporting the black students, but, you know, many people's lives were changed by the ferocity, the just the day-to-day intensity of the black student strike. Again, anybody associated with the Wapandusi YUC, it was a full-life commitment, obviously, which could have involved either retribution or law enforcement and jail.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody on that committee was vulnerable to that.
Okay.
I did remember something parenthetically. One of my SDS buddies had a great relationship personally with Ralph Peterson, head of campus police. And I must say he was very good and active in Dow, but he didn't have a peep or a line in the press or anything. He was not involved in the law enforcement response to the black student strike, either on a strategic planning or daily basis. He was out of the picture, Troy. That's very important information.
So you're talking about Ralph Hansen,
Ralph Hansen. I said Peterson. Ralph Hansen. Good get, Troy. Good. Mm-hmm. Sorry, missed that. Yeah.
So head of police for UW.
Campus.
Right.
And did a great job in Dow in terms of trying to calm things down. He was viewed not as an ally, but somebody we could work with, always. But the black strike, you know, Willie had no relationship with him. He was out of the picture. It was well over his head from day one, and once the guard was in, Ralph, you know, was told what to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
I want to say, shortly after the Kent State, you know, anniversary we just passed, that the guard behaved incredibly professionally and well on the University of Wisconsin campus all the times that I've been there. So I just want to go with that.
Okay.
Incredibly professional, humane behavior. Still there?
Yep, I'm here. So.
Okay.
So.
I just want to say that that's another part of my memory.
Right.
That we never got near a Kent State situation with the guard. Never. Not even close. No worries.
So since you brought up Kent State, that was what would be the next year, or is it even, now it's 70, so,
well,
yeah, so that's the next, that would be your next academic year, which would be your senior year, correct?
No, it's just about April 30th, 1970. 1970, the Nixon speech that he was going into Cambodia. That changed everything again to the intensity we had had a year before with the Black Strike, but totally unrelated to the historic event we're talking about.
Right. But again, to try to get a bit of context of your time here on campus, since this is the public interview, you're still on campus.
Sets were off after April 30th, and then a month later, a week later, Kent State, you know, all bets were off. You know, I can't even go there.
So what you're saying is you were involved, but you don't want to discuss your involvement.
I will never discuss my involvement post April 30th.
Okay.
Now, just one thing before we leave or before we reschedule or go to another point. In my bio, RYM, it's SDS-RYM2. That stands for Revolutionary Youth Movement Number 2. That's totally antagonistic and opposed to the Weathermen, which were RYM1.
Okay.
So when we talk about post Ann Arbor, when the Weathermen, RYM1, do their big national meeting in Ann Arbor with all the things that came later, we were totally opposed to that.
And I don't have the dates in front of me, and I hate to ask you if you don't.
Specifically, so when I say all bets are off, that doesn't mean that we allied or behaved or conjoined with the RYM1, the weather people on campus. We knew who they were,
mm-hmm.
Took over an SDS2 meeting. We knew who they were. We had no relationships with them. We didn't like them, and we didn't want to work with them. We opposed them.
Okay.
And that's a lot of history you can get from Rosen, more on policy. Of course, Rosen was at the leadership of SDS RIM 2 in Madison, the Madison chapter. He was close to the leadership. And also, there's a book by Thomas Bates, B-A-T-E-S, called RADS, that identifies Rosen in leadership as well. So he's not hiding. He knows more than me.
Mm-hmm. So, Jeff, do you graduate that spring semester of 1970?
Yes, June 8th, 1970, but the guard was there, so I didn't have my parents come. I didn't attend. My father picked me up, whether it was June 1st, 2nd, 3rd, whenever, after the last final, and grabbed me saying, you know, God, you're free of an arrest. That's unbelievable. We got to get you out of here now. So he flew me out, basically.
So he didn't, did he, so he flew in to get you and you flew back out?
Yeah, from Milwaukee.
Okay.
He drove a rental to Milwaukee and got me back home. First week of June or around June 1st. Robin just rang the doorbell. Target truck.
That's right. So that sort of officially ends your 4 years. I mean, it does end your 4 years on campus.
Yeah, and then I started teaching in New York City under what was called an emergency license, but I was one credit short after my first year, and they shipped me back to Madison to get my last credit the summer of 1971.
Hmm.
One credit short of what I needed for the permanent teacher's license.
So, since you actually weren't here on campus, I still like to ask people who were on campus during this time period about their thoughts of the Sterling Hall bombing in August of 1970.
Right, but you have a comprehensive history, and we hope this, what we're doing today and with others, becomes a campus voice. That's your decision.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty high level. I haven't gone into the detail. I was in London the morning after the bombing and convened a meeting of Wisconsin student and professors who were in England at the time about the bombing. We actually had a physical meeting in a London flat, if you will, about the bombing, how it just ripped us apart in terms of who we are as human beings and what we wanted to do with our lives and how our years at Wisconsin were going to be remembered. It completely tarnished all of us. So, very, very upset.
Mm-hmm.
And I convened a meeting. I was so upset in another country because I had network and relationships to do that, including my comp lit professor from back when I studied. He was there.
That's, I guess in my mind, in the pre-internet, pre-email era, pretty amazing that you could convene a meeting in 1970 like that and get everybody together.
Well, then the meeting we're talking about, I don't remember the dates, in August, but I was still in London. I was traveling around Europe, but there was no higher priority than getting the network together to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been changed.
Right.
And there was nothing good about it. I mean, so why would I take people's times in studying if there are professors abroad or people? But that's how upsetting it was to anybody, no matter what their politics, who had been associated with the University of Wisconsin-Madison in London at the time.
Okay.
We had about 6 people at the meeting.
Jeff, is there anything else on your mind about this time period that you feel?
I mean, you have the bio to go back into anything you want. I've committed in when I sent the bio to say you can selectively edit, recover anything from the bio, and, you know, readdress.
Right.
Now
I think
another time I'm committed to making this a successful oral history. Mm-hmm. I hope as good as the Sterling Bombing Campus Voice history. I really hope so. That's my goal.
Okay. And then I guess the one thing and that's in your bio here is that spring of 69 at Ag Hall, there were several members of the Milwaukee chapter of the Black Panther Party.
The Black Panther Party came up.
And they asked you to be involved in that?
No, again, through SDS leadership, probably Rosen or somebody like him. I don't think it was Rosen at the time, said, can you help secure the Black Panther? I said, what are you talking about? I don't carry any arms. And they go, well, wait a minute. They have access to arms, but they're not allowed to talk in Ag Hall on the stage with guns present. So how are you going to make sure nobody else has a gun? And I said, we will screen and search. And I did that with another person from SDS, the two of us. So.
Okay.
That's relative to that comment. I mean, things got really serious after the Black Strike.
All right. Jeff, I think that hits what I wanted to ask about today.
Great. Happy that we've wrapped this.
So I will obviously, I'm going to officially shut the interview off here, and then you and I can chat for a couple minutes if you don't mind.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I just want to refer to the Oral History Congressional Authorization Act under the Civil Rights History Project Act of 2009, 5 years ago. So I just want you to know about that, which is why the timing of this so serendipitous. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking 45 years. We're talking, and the real goal of this is to be able to feed dissertations that might come up by the 50th anniversary, and I see a minimal life cycle of 5 years in development from scratch for a dissertation that might include the Black Strike. So I want to make sure we hit it this May, and you've helped me, and I can't thank you enough. And we also have the anniversary of the Congressional Act in 2009. This mentions oral history. I'll go into that quote in a minute when you're ready.
Okay. If you want to go into that quote on the record, the recorder's still on, but
okay. Well,
why don't we do that?
About May 12, 2009, 5 years ago, Congress authorized the Civil Rights History Project Act of 2009, directing the Library of Congress and the Smithsonian Institute to conduct a survey of existing oral history collections with relevance to the civil rights movement, period.
Okay. So you're saying that along with just the fact that it's, well, in 5 years it'll be the 50th anniversary of the Black Strike,
exactly.
is part of the reason why you personally...
With this oral history, Troy, and put it in a dissertation or use it in research, they got 5 years to the 50th. I think that's enough time to at least get them started, as long as we got something of record. And that's my goal, to get this into the history books.
Right. All right, Jeff, I want to thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.